Empower Radio presents The Farkas Files, an exploration of energy, metaphysics, and the paranormal with David Franklin Farkas. The Farkas Files. The truth is in here, somewhere. Here's your host, David Franklin Farkas.
Good evening. Thanks so much for being with us, I would say tonight, but you could be listening to us from anywhere in the world at any time, which is one of the very cool things about the technology and how many people are listening. I get phone calls every once in a while about something else, and people will say that they listen to the show all the time. It's very gratifying. My guest tonight is Itzhak Beery, who is a fascinating shaman and teacher, and we will be talking to him in just a few minutes after tonight's metaphysical musing. And I write for an online magazine called The Magic Happens, themagichappens.com. And I've known these folks for 8 years. I've written for them all that time. And I write one essay or two essays a month for them. And each issue has a topic, and then we have our own column that we can write in. And this month's topic was charity. And I decided to look up something I've heard about before, but kind of pull all the information together. And that's the idea of suspended coffee, which was something that started 100 years ago in Naples, Italy. People who had a little extra money, when they paid for their coffee, would say, "And one suspended." Sounds really nicer in Italian. And what that meant was put one on a tab for anybody who can't afford coffee. And people knew that was the way things worked, and they would come to the door and say, "Do you have any suspended coffee?" And if somebody had paid for it, they would be able to come in and just get a free cup of coffee and sit down and have a wonderful, warm moment. And that's been going on. Coffee evidently is a very important part of Italian life. I didn't know that. And at various times in history, obviously, there have been moments of financial hardship for individuals, but also people falling on hard times because of the economy. And that's what's going on in Europe now. And so the idea of suspended coffee has moved all over Europe. And in Spain, it's now called pending coffee. And in France, it's called coffee waiting. And it's the same idea. And the beauty of it is that the person who's buying the cup of coffee never sees and never knows the person who gets the drink. And there's a certain sweetness to that, but there's also the privacy of the person who needs a little bit of help not having to deal with their emotions of getting something from somebody. There's no shame there. And this has taken off. It's being done all over the world. It's totally amazing to me that this simple little concept of I've got a little extra today, I'll buy coffee for somebody else, has just completely taken off. But it's even bigger and more interesting than that. In Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, there is a little pizza shop called Rosa's, and something similar happened. Somebody walked in one day and said, "Can I buy a slice of pizza for a homeless person?" And they said, "Wow, that's a great idea." So they wrote down something on a post-it note and stuck it on the board. And when somebody came in that looked like they needed a meal, they said, "You can have free pizza. Take that post-it note." And as people realized what was going on, they started coming in more and more, and they went buy their pizza, and they'd buy an extra slice. And that extra slice would be provided to somebody at another time, and the person just had to go over to the bulletin board, take the note, go up and pay for their pizza with the note. It was prepaid by somebody else. And they started a second notice board with post-it notes of the thank yous from the people that had gotten pizza. So the whole restaurant is covered with post-it notes. And at last count, they gave out over 84,000 slices of pizza to people who couldn't afford a meal. And something similar happened in a little town in Oklahoma, War, Oklahoma. There's a funky sandwich shop called PB Jams, and they have a sense of humor about everything, evidently, from what I've seen of the pictures. And they realized that somebody was dumpster diving. Somebody was going through the garbage bin behind the restaurant at night, knowing that there would be, they could come up with some food from there. And he put, the owner put a sign on the dumpster that said, "I know you're doing this. You're a human being. Come in. I'll give you a sandwich and some veggies and a drink. I'm your friend." And that also took off, and people started offering to buy meals for people. The owner would have done it anyway, but all of a sudden there was a community thing going on where people knew that they could make this little offer, and the people who needed a meal knew they could go there. And it was a whole process of community. So as we look at, what can I do for people? You know, I don't have any time. It's difficult. It's complicated. No, it's not. There is always somebody that needs a little something. And if you have a little bit more at that moment, in that moment of gratitude for how much you've got, you can give a little bit extra to somebody else. And with a little bit of organization, you can get lots of people to do that. And suddenly it becomes a whole flow of coffee or food or whatever it happens to be that goes from people that have a little more than they need to people that don't have nearly enough. And basically, it's just a flow of love, people taking care of each other because, as Ram Dass would say, we're all just walking each other home. We're all in this together, whether we make believe that we're not. We're all just walking each other home. So that's tonight's metaphysical music. And now we're going to have some fun with Itzhak Beery. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Oh, I'm so glad to be here with you. Absolutely.
And you have quite the CV here. You're a healer. You're a teacher. You've been initiated into several traditions in Central and South America. You started the shamanportal.org. Mm-hmm. You're co-founder of the New York Shamanic Circle, and you're faculty at the New York Open Center. And the book that I have in my hand is Shamanic Transformations, True Stories of the Moment of Awakening, which is lots of people telling about how they wound up involved in shamanism and about their walkabout, and that's what we talk to people about all the time. So I really appreciate you taking some time with us. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, you're very welcome.
So the first thing I always ask our guests, especially people who are doing shamanic work, is what was your journey? What was your walkabout? How did you wind up on this shamanic path?
For me, it was a total mistake, I think. Something I really never really planned to be engaged with at all. When I was born in Kibbutz Beit Alpha, it's in Kibbutz in Israel, not too far from the Sea of Galilee, and we were the first kibbutz of the Hashomer HaTzair, the youth movement, the communist movement. Mm-hmm. So for us, any kind of religion or any kind of spiritualism was the old way, you know, what my parents and the people who established the kibbutz ran away from Europe. You know, they thought that everybody who is religious and everybody who is spiritual, there's something wrong. We have to create a new society in the land of Israel, and that society is agricultural society. So bring back the Jews to work the land, and which is a very noble idea. So I grew up in rejecting religious and rejecting Judaism, And here I am. So it was a process, you know, because when I was a child, what I really wanted to be is I wanted to be a great painter, or someone like Picasso. That's really was my passion in life. And I didn't get to do that, but I was a fine artist. I showed in many exhibitions in many places in the world. There was one time I even lived off selling my art.
Which is very impressive. Many people don't realize how impressive that is.
Yes. but I really, that wasn't something for me. And I became a graphic designer. Then when I moved here to New York, I had an advertising agency. And I wouldn't say that we were successful financially, but artistically we were very successful. Won many awards in commercial television, commercial radio, print. And somewhere around when I enter my 40th birthday, I realize that something is missing. Something, it can't be that this is all it there is. There must be something more. And I became a little depressed, I think. I was just looking. I didn't know where to go. I mean, I didn't know where to look. I kind of lived in a little of a fog. And like now I understand that every time God sent us, or the Creator sent us a sign, and the difference is that people who, it's either you take it or you give up on it. And so I took it, and that was a trip to Hawaii with a friend. And on that trip, I bought a book about Hawaii or something spiritual about Hawaii. And it turned out that it was just the medicine that I needed. It was a story of Hank Russellman about spiritual dreams that he had that was just really fascinating. It's called Spirit Walker. I highly recommend. And in the end of the book, there was a story he was telling about a workshop he took with a guy named Michael Harner. So I came to New York. I realized that Michael Harner is going to be there. So I took a workshop. So one thing led to the other, and I took a workshop with a guy named John Perkins, and he told us about a trip that he's doing, going to Ecuador. And I didn't know why I want to go to Ecuador, but I decided I'm going to go to Ecuador because something in me was calling me to do that. And to my total surprise, I met a person there who is a shaman who I had an incredible experience with him. And I came back a year and a half later, and then I became his apprentice. And I worked with him for 3 years, mostly in New York, actually, when he came here to do healing work. And I learned from him. He was teaching me, and then he initiated me down in Otavalo in Ecuador. That's how I became part of the circle of 24 yachaks. But if I tell you that this is what I plan to do, no. If somebody would tell me at the age of 40 that this is what I'm going to be doing, I would probably think that he's totally crazy. This is not something that I plan to be. But, you know, I as I told you earlier, there is a plan for each person for what the reason why he came here to this earth. And I found out only 4 years ago after doing this for 16 years that my grandfather in Poland was a Kabbalistic rabbi and a healer.
Mm-hmm.
And he devoted his life to the battle between good and evil. And it turned out that for the last 8 years or so, this is the focus of my work. So I could not say that I made it up independently. I think that mostly is that my ancestor has a lot to do with it.
It's interesting. Along the way, people used to say about my grandmother, you know, grandma's kind of a witch. Mm-hmm. And I always thought that was just that, you know, there could be 20 people that showed up in the tiny apartment and she'd figure out how to feed them. But there obviously was more going on that I didn't know about. And my dad also could just, not so much for himself, but for other people, could just make things happen.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it feels like Star Wars, the force is strong in my family.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, it also was not something I was looking for. You know, certainly my junior high school guidance counselor didn't say, this is what you're going to do after.
Probably not. You know, many of my clients that are coming to me, you can see when I do the reading for them, the candle reading, the palm reading, I can see that they have a lineage of healing or healers.
Mm-hmm.
And they're totally surprised that their great-grandfather or great-grandmother coming from families of healers. And, you know, it comes just to show that the shamanic tradition is very strong on the connection between our ancestors and ourselves, and the belief that our ancestors in many ways help and control or push us to do what really we need to do. The sad part about it is that we are kind of disconnected from our ancestors, especially Jews who came from Europe. A lot of our families are no longer, and we don't have the memory.
Right.
So I think that the ancestry work is very important, not just to connect with them because we owe them our own existence, but also to know what we are made of, what are our DNA, why are we here, what are we doing to honor them. It's a very important teachings in the shamanic work.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting how science is catching up with that.
Mm-hmm.
There's now science showing that at least stress is carried forward generation after generation in how the DNA expresses.
Mm-hmm.
What they haven't do, I think, because they don't think that way, is gone backwards through the timeline to show how other things express themselves working forward. But, you know, as a shamanic concept, it's in every tradition all over the world that we are both connected to our ancestors and they affect us, but also that we need to do healing work to heal them and what they went through.
Yes. And you know, I think that the disconnect from our ancestors, it's an impediment for us because we could use that to move our life purpose more strongly and to be more connected and empowered by that.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's, you know, we're so used to in modern, at least the United States, but Western society, being angry at our ancestors.
You know, yes.
What mom and dad did to me, and, you know, my grandmother was a jerk, and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Rather than looking at what they survived and what their pain was, and they did the best they could, and now it's my turn to do better than that, but also to forgive them and heal what they went through.
Absolutely. And also to remember that you're going to be one day an ancestor.
Yeah, the older you get, the closer that comes.
But it's also put a lot of responsibility and mentoring to your relationship to your family and for the community, because your work here would probably influence your great-grandchildren.
Right.
And we have to really think about it, not as individuals who live in a certain time and space, but as a continuum of energy that is going to be passed on to the next generations and other generation until you come back again and do that the same work again. So it makes it put life in a totally different perspective.
Yeah, it's always fascinating talking to people who came from essentially an atheist tradition, mm-hmm. where spirituality was not only not part of it, but was denigrated. And there are lots of people in the world at this point who feel that way. When you have the personal experience of connecting to your own spirituality and the creator and the ancestors, all of a sudden it all makes perfect sense, and you know what everybody was talking about. And it's not religion.
No.
It's not the structure. It's not the story that the big religious organizations have come up with. It's a very, very personal, visceral experience. I always say, you know, experience trumps belief. Doesn't matter what you believe. Once you have an experience, you know that that's true.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's what's so beautiful about this new book, The Shamanic Transformations, because this is intimate moments of many people who are were not religious or were not spiritualist, and something happened to them. Something, right. Something that which they cannot explain happened and which changed their life. And I think that, you know, I'm sure many of the listeners have probably had moments like that. And I think that the reading about other people who went through the same experience probably give us an okay feeling to, or permission to follow those experiences and accept them.
Right. And for me, my understanding of walkabout, which doesn't have to be the big exotic thing we think of going out into the wilderness. You're going out into the wilderness of not knowing what's happening next or how you'll deal with it, trusting that you'll be guided.
Yes.
And trusting that if you just ask what next, you'll be shown what next, sometimes in extremely humorous ways.
Well, you learn not to ask because...
Yeah, we all have our stories of asking very specific things and getting exactly what we asked for, which was not what we wanted.
Exactly.
Because we weren't specific enough and didn't know what in the world we were talking about most of the time. we're going to go to a break in a couple of minutes, and I want to come back and talk more about the book and the patterns of the stories that you noticed, because you interviewed so many people. And again, I want to thank you. I'm going to call some of these people to be on the show. The stories are great.
Oh, they're amazing authors. And many of them were my teachers, you know, like Hank Russellman, mm-hmm. and John Perkins. And so there's a great... great satisfaction for me to be able to bring their intimate story to to the audience wherever they are, and
right.
and inspire them. We will talk about it later. I think it's such a beautiful account.
So let's make sure people know where to find you. What is your web address?
It's my name. .com, itzhakbeery.com, itzhakbeery.com.
Terrific. And you also have various things that you're doing in New York, and you've got the shamanportal.org.
Yes.
Is another place where people can find what you're doing with other people.
Yeah, well, people can send me their email from the website, and I will put them on my mailing list. I usually don't list on my website all mm-hmm. the events. I send it right. directly to them, so you're welcome to do that.
Excellent. So we're going to a break. Mm-hmm. We will be back shortly, unless, of course, we get taller. This is shamanism, after all. My guest tonight is Itzhak Beery, shaman and teacher from New York City. And this is the Farkas Files. I'm David Franklin Farkas, and we're on Empower Radio. Don't go nowhere. We'll be right back.
These days, many Americans are at risk of foreclosure and losing their homes. Fortunately, help is available. Making Home Affordable is a free program from the U.S. government that has already helped over 1 million struggling homeowners, and we want to help you.
I'm home.
I'm home.
And I love it. I'm home.
I'm home.
Find out now what your options are. Go to makinghomeaffordable.gov or call 1-888-995-HOPE. The sooner you act, the better chance we can help you.
I'm home.
I'm home.
Where I belong.
Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Sassy! Sassy!
This week's episode, Danger at the Old Well.
Last one to the old well's a rotten egg.
Ha ha, I win. Whoa! Ah!
Sassy! Johnny fell down the well.
I'm wet.
What, Sassy? You know where Mr. Gunderson keeps his rope? Go get it, girl! What? You'd rather use this time to set people straight about shelter pet adoption?
I'm cold!
People shouldn't be afraid to adopt from a shelter? Because shelter pets are screened for sound health and temperament?
I'm wet and cold!
Sassy, what about Johnny? What? Let Johnny sit in the well until he learns to be more self-reliant? Sassy!
What'd he say?
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt!
Have you ever lost a cat? And have you ever wanted to get your cat back after you lost it? Hi there, I'm Andrew Hoffman. I went on this website called InventNow.org. Then I decided to make an invention of my own. It's called the Lost Cat Magnet Invention. So you can get your cat back after you lost it. Just turn it on and lost cat stick to it. That's a good cat. If your cat was hiding up in a tree, it won't be up a tree anymore. It will be stuck to the lost cat magnet. And sometimes they fly toward you in the air. Just listen to one satisfied cat. See, that's proof. You should go to the InventNow.org website too. But just remember one thing. Don't do a lost cat magnet.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions or just play some games at InventNow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Now back to the Farkas Files with David Franklin Farkas on Empower Radio.
And we're back. This is David Franklin Farkas on the Farkas Files with Itzhak Beery, talking about shamanism and his new book. And I'm fascinated with the stories of the people that you interviewed, but especially fascinated about what it was like to interview your teachers.
I think that the thing that is so beautiful about it is that when you look at when you look at your teacher, you always see the results of many of work of many years. you're not participating in the process of being.
Right.
And I think that these accounts are so intimate and so beautiful that it allows you to have like another window into their forming or becoming a spiritual being or teachers or healers.
It's like interviewing family members, if you ever get to do that, interviewing grandparents and aunts and uncles and that kind of thing, which so few people do. And you find out all the complicated and difficult things that they went through that you never would have guessed.
It changed your relationship to them, but in a good way, not in a bad way. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a really wonderful way of connecting to the process of the shamanic or the spiritual awakening. Not to be afraid to go through it or to experience it, and I think that it's only going to happen to other people.
Right. Well, I know, especially after 4 years of interviewing people, but I saw it even before that, that there's kind of a pattern, a process that unfolds. And I'm wondering if you noticed that as well, interviewing so many people, that it unfolds in a certain way, even though everybody's story is different and their experiences and the places they had the experiences are different. That the process is very much the same.
Yeah, I think that there are two different categories of experiences in this book. The first category is the Westerners, like people like me and you and other teachers. And the other category is, which was so beautifully written in this book by Luis Miguel Madrone and Kitty Rose, is that they come from a culture where children grow intimately in the spiritual way. So for them, every moment is a moment of awakening.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have a one moment. In our culture, we are looking for that moment of awakening. Everybody wants to be enlightened, and they think that enlightenment comes in one second, like a split of a second, and then whoops, you are a totally different person, and now right. You could be a guru. In indigenous cultures, they understand that life gives us magical moment, every moment of it. And it's a beautiful contrast between these two worldviews. And it's also contrast the way, why is shamanism is so essential for us, for all of us, the Westerners, the Northern, the Southerners, every inhabitant of this magnificent earth, because each moment on this earth is a moment of change. Like those people who walk into a coffee shop and they decided to give a cup of coffee to people who don't have. It's an act of faith. It's
right.
Act of creation. So every moment in our life is a moment of creation, which is very important teaching for us to live with the earth, with the elements, with the weather, with one another, not to hold anger, to have that flow of life and miracles of life, to live in the magic of the universe. In the Western, we are waiting for that particular moment. And there is, like you said, if you read this story after story about people who were not aware of it, or they were not prepared to have a moment like that, and all of a sudden some crisis happened, some situation happened, and they were faced with that moment, in which is after their experience changed their lens, they see their life through, which is a beautiful, beautiful experience.
Right. And in my observation, it's often an illness or an accident or some other thing that shifts what's going on in your life and makes you pay attention and look for a solution. And the solution is not what you expected.
Well, it most of the time it's about bringing you to a place of crisis, mm-hmm. a place of disbelief, or a place of physical challenge or a mental challenge that you have to face another reality. And that moment come. And this moment can come in your home, in your kitchen. It can come climbing up the mountain. It could be on a seashore. It could be on the ocean. It could be in many different places. And each story did happen in different situations. Some happened while taking ayahuasca. Some take in other methods of healing. Each one of them has a different situation. But I think the commonality of it is that it did come from a moment of crisis that, like you said, people wanted to or needed solution or to show the way.
And it's, the stories that I've heard, but also even my story, people listen to my story and go, "You did what? why were you willing to do that? Why?" The funny answer is it seemed like a good idea at the time. But it's that once you're in that process and you're on that path, you want to know what next and you want to see what unfolds and see where it's going. And you learn to trust the process. You learn that spirit will guide you and there's something really cool that's going to happen around the corner after the challenge. After the next challenge, people ask me if I play video games, and I say, "Why would I do that? I'm a shaman." I'm always going to strange places, meeting interesting people, being given objects of power. Where do you think that stuff came from?
By the way, there is a video game called Shaman.
Oh, that doesn't.
You know that?
No.
It's actually very popular. It has a lot of followers all over the world. Look it up. It's called Shaman. I think it came from Japan.
Of course. but it's a good metaphor for people because you start realizing that it's exactly like the artificial thing that goes on in video games, except it's real. That's what goes on. You go into this unexpected challenge where you meet fascinating people and they tell you things you never expected and give you things to use that you never even heard of before. And at some point it feels like, okay, I've got to go and do this for myself and other people. But, most of the people I know that have done it, it took years. I know for me, I apprenticed for 3 years, but there was a process leading up to that and certainly integrating it, trying to be a normal person and still work with people and all the rest of it was a process of decades. So.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about Shaman Portal and the Shamanic Circle.
When I was in Ecuador in 1997, I had a session with ayahuasca. Mm-hmm. And I wrote about it in this book because I think that that was so important. In this ayahuasca vision, which I'm not going to describe right now, but I made a commitment to spirit that I would help protect the Amazon and the people who are keeping the wisdom of the ancient and that for thousands of years in the Amazon. And I was thinking about what I can do. There was a lot of group of people who were already very involved. And I thought that what I can do is change the heart or change the mind of people in the north by bringing all the shamanic community together. Because until then, and Shaman Portal is about 8 years old now, until then, there was no one place where shamanic teachers and practitioners from all tradition can come and post their existence, and they can post their workshops and teachings and articles and blogs. And so I created one because I thought that it would help the shamanic community spread the word and for people who are looking for shamanic teachings to find their own teachers. And I truly believe that in a way, a way to change and to preserve our world is through one person at a time, by opening one's heart and understanding that we have to do this work. And so that site is now very popular, and people come there from many traditions and from all over the world to advertise their workshops and teachings and trips and trainings to let people know what they do and what they offer to the community. And there is a great forum that people discuss shamanic experiences and have questions, and other people answer them. It's a beautiful meeting place for shamanics from all over the world.
Sounds like a place I ought to plug into. I will go check it out. I'm sure I will enjoy that forum. There are some forums on Facebook, and they tend to fall into people telling each other they're doing it wrong, or you should this or you shouldn't that. And it would be lovely to have to go to a place where it's more straightforward and people are just looking for answers and giving answers based on their experience.
You're very welcome to come. It's open to all.
I will yeah. Wave to you when I get there.
And the New York Shamanic Circle also came very much after my first trip with John Perkins in 1997. We did a workshop with at the Open Center, and a group of us decided that we want to continue to do this work. We started informal meetings, weekly meetings, and slowly it became monthly, opening to the community. And now we have four different circles every week. Women's circle, healing circle, sound music, and a big circle, like open circle. And they are all by donation. The people can come for free. And then we have once a month, we have workshop offered by members of the core members or other guest shamans from around the world, from different traditions. And then once a year, we have, which is going to be on October 18, this Sunday, is going to be the New York Shamanic Gathering. It's our 17th year With guest shamans from Native Americans, from Ecuador, from the Yorubas, from Mexico, from many different cultures. They all come together. Last year, we had more than 300 people coming as a community for with potluck to exchange idea, to meet each other, to share knowledge and wisdom and time. It is so important to have in the biggest city in the world, the most capitalist city in the world, so many people who are interested in working to change the world in the shamanic world.
Yeah, it's wonderful, and it's one of those things about New York that most people don't realize is that it's a place full of these amazing small communities with people doing absolutely striking things that you never would have suspected. So wonderful to know that there's a shamanic community there, and there's probably several.
Well, we are the New York Shamanic Circle is we are 18 years now.
Mm-hmm.
We are the largest organization and that provide all these ongoing services. There is a lot of people that came out of our organization, and they offering their own teachings and workshops, and which is wonderful. It's really expanding. We have a sister organization now in Brooklyn, and the community grows, and it's really called for each person who feels the call to teach other people to do that, to share and to learn from the elders or the people who are doing it for a longer time, so we can spread the practice. Mm-hmm. It's all for the better of our society, because people who do this shamanic work are caring for the environment. They live in a more sustainable way. By living by this example, they teach their families. So it spreads. Spread the word.
Yeah, absolutely. What a wonderful thing. And you mentioned Brooklyn, which is my hometown. And yeah. Most people don't know it's the fourth largest city in the United States all by itself.
That's right.
It's huge.
And because of the diversity in New York and Brooklyn and Queens, there are so many cultures, vibrant cultures, and that we can validate by bringing them to work together in our gathering, in our shamanic work. It honor them, and I think that's very important for all of us to learn all these traditions that are right here. And We in New York, we have so many languages spoken on the street.
So many languages, so many cultures, and each of those cultures has a healing tradition.
That's right. And it's a great way for us to learn from each other.
Mm-hmm. And what's fascinating to me is if you sit with it long enough and the strangeness and newness of another culture's rituals and the sound of their language kind of disappears, you realize that it's all the same thing. It's just variations on how to connect to spirit, to the ancestors, to nature, to consciousness. And those moments are very precious.
Absolutely. And, you know, it reminds me of a story that on my first trip to Ecuador, I met this amazing shaman, Alberto Tazzo. And we were in his village, and he was talking about the shamanic work and how it's important and how he speaks to the trees and to the land. Mm-hmm. And so I asked him, what do you say to us where we are devoided of nature? It's so easy to do shamanic work in the jungles or in the Andes, or in places of nature, but what people in New York can do. And he looked at me and he says, he couldn't understand why would I even say that. He said, But buildings have spirits.
That's right.
Sidewalks have spirits. Cars have spirit. Everything has spirit. And it's truly clicked in my mind that we see our life, everything around us, that have no spirit. But the truth is that everything in the universe, and that's the shamanic teaching, that everything is alive. Everything right. is, everything have consciousness. So being in New York, in this biggest metropolitan, the busiest one of them, does have spirit. And it's our choice if we want to connect with the spirit of the trees and the buildings and the cars in New York. And that's our work. Is our work is to bring people to feel part of their environment, not to be lonely or disconnected right. from it.
Well, also what I found is the loneliness is also there for things like the trees. Nobody in New York, very few people in New York, talk to the trees, and they're very social. So if you talk to a street tree and put your hand on it, the first thing you get is gratitude that somebody's paying attention and talking to them.
Yeah.
I also had a moment in an airport or shopping mall, I don't remember, some big concrete building, where I was just sitting, spacing out, and suddenly saw what looked like elemental spirits. But they didn't look like elves, and they didn't look like trolls. They were something else. And I asked them who they were, and they were the spirits of the structure of the building that kept the building together.
yeah.
I was like, oh, cool. I figured you guys were here, but good to meet you. Because there's always a consciousness, and there may be a personality to it, or there may not. But and on the other hand, I talked to a psychiatrist at a wedding this weekend and realized I have to always start those conversations with, okay, I know I have four diagnoses in the DSM-4 diagnostic manual, but you have to kind of put those aside for us to talk. Because they, you know, the scientific point of view is that these experiences are impossible and therefore crazy. And that's part of what we're dispelling in doing all of this.
For many people who ask me about how they can have a practice in urban situation, I go to a little park next to my house, and I have a tree, a willow mm-hmm. tree, that I hug almost every yep. morning.
Yeah.
And I speak to him, and I connect through him to other trees in the Amazon.
Yep.
And to wherever I want to, because their trees are basically conduits to speak to spirit and to other trees. You can grow your own plants in your home, and every plant is a whole universe.
Right.
And you can connect to that spirit. So there's a lot of things you can do to connect to spirit of nature within your home. You don't have to go to mountains. You don't have to go to the jungle to be spiritual or to be shaman.
Absolutely. Well, it's like what this always happens with guests that are so much fun and have so much to say. We're out of time.
Oh.
So perhaps we can do this again, because I'm totally enjoying spending time with you. My guest tonight is Itzhak Berry. His website is his name, which is itzhakberry.com. The other website he has is shamanportal.org. And his latest book is Shamanic Transformations. Itzhak, thank you so much for spending some time with us. I really appreciate it. This has been great fun.
Oh, you're very welcome. I enjoyed it very much, too.
Okay, and stay on. We'll chat a little bit after the show.
Okay, sure.
So, again, thank my guest, Itzhak Berry. And if you got at all curious about this strange guy, David, and what in the world does he do, go to househealing.com and cleverly hiding in plain view on the contact tab are a lot of different ways to get in touch with me, including my scheduling calendar. I do a free telephone assessment of whatever's going on with a person, place, or situation, and we can see if my work would be helpful. If you want to know more about the show, go to thefarkasfiles.com. And empowerradio.com is the wonderful platform that lets us do all of this. And
now, back to the Farkas Files.
I hope you will be with us next week and every week. It's a pleasure knowing that so many people listen to us. And until next week, this is David Franklin Farkas for the Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere. On Empower Radio. Have a fantastic week.